This is KHENLPFM Radio, 106.9, Salida, Colorado. And this evening, I've got John D., who's a frequent caller to a number of the radio programs that I do some research on so that I'm able to do this program on KHEN. And John has a pretty good repertoire of research that he's done over the years, and I wanted to give him a platform to kind of that's more than just a few minutes, because often he's just calling in as a caller, and I really wanted to get into a little bit more in-depth information from him. And he does have a website, and it's on transporterblogspot.blogspot.com. Boy, that is a mouthful. And so it gives you kind of an area of where he works from, and it's kind of a crossover between some of his beliefs but also into a lot of research that a lot of people aren't really willing to get into, such as futuristic type what would I want to call it? Things that are mentioned of maybe in biblical writings, but then he starts finding it in the current research that is being done with some of the schools or science community. Is that correct, John?
Yes, it is. I don't know. In particular, you're talking about are you talking about the transhumanism aspect?
Yes, that's one of them. But that's not the only area that you seem to cover on some of your calls. But what I really got interested in that aspect, because there really is a lot of research going into this avenue, but it isn't necessarily in the forefront, you know, on mainstream TV and or radio or media or whatever. And what got you started in looking into this and then going to the libraries and that sort, trying to back up your curiosity?
Well, Melody, what it was basically was that years ago, I told you earlier, I read a book by George Grant. And it was called Grand Illusions, The Legacy of Planned Parenthood. Now, as a result of that book, I went in to check out the eugenics movement. This is back before the Internet, or if the Internet existed, I didn't know about it. So my research was basically go to a library, read everything you can, try and determine what was true, what was false, what was intentional deception. It took me down rabbit holes, and while you're in the research, you find an answer to your question, but while you're in the rabbit hole, you find another question. So it's an endless search looking for the truth. Basically, with regards to transhumanism, I was listening to Giuliani during the debates, and he was giving a speech, and he wrote a paper. He was given a speech before the debates, and he was talking about America's need for a hybrid military. Well, on the surface, that sounds fine. Hybrid military. Multi-use or multifaceted. So I punched in hybrid military in the computer, because by that time we've all got the Internet. And I find out that there's transhuman studies going on in basically every college in the world that has a medical college is involved in transhuman studies, to the point where they're developing curriculum for transhuman.
When you say transhuman, explain what you mean.
Well, transhuman is something that's not exactly human and not exactly animal. It's a conglomeration of animal and human DNA. That's the only way that it can be explained, in my opinion. The Human Genome Project, you know, you ask yourself, why was that so important? Why was Hitler involved in genetic engineering and genetic tests? What was his hang-up with trying to find a master race? Well, through the studies, I find out that America had a Fitter Families program back in the 20s and 30s, you know. America has a secret past, or a past that is so sinister that they cover it up, and you've got to really dig into it to find it. Forced sterilization programs that didn't end until the 1970s, folks. I mean, you're talking about America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where if someone's determined by the leadership to be unfit to father a child, the United States was forcibly sterilizing them under false pretenses, telling you've got a ruptured appendix, and while they're in there, they're sterilized. It went before the Supreme Court. This guy that we're all held up to think was a great justice, Oliver Wendell Holmes, in a decision with Buck versus Bell, said that it was better for all the world to allow forced sterilization, because two generations of imbeciles was enough. Now, this is in America, and we're seeing it now. It used to be that they forced sterilization. They forced the abortions. That didn't go over too well with a lot of people, so now it's, you have a right not to have a child. It's your right. It's your body. And at the whole time, they've painted the lips of the pig to make it sound more palatable to people that may have a problem with someone saying that you can't have a child. Now it's your choice, but they want your choice to be to choose not to have the child.
Is there any, in your research, where do you think this came from? Or what are you finding to show where this started or the history is written?
Well, you know, I've gone back to it. I've talked about it a little bit on RBN. And because of my perspective, because I believe the Bible is true, if you go back to Genesis chapter 6, when it talks about the sons of God saw the daughters of men that they were fair and took unto themselves wives whomsoever they chose, this is fallen angels, folks, that found women. They didn't ask them. They didn't tell them, I love you, will you marry me? They took unto themselves wives, and they had offspring. The offspring were the men of renown, in my opinion, and I believe the Bible backs me up. If you do the Hebrew word search in Genesis, or you do the Hebrew translation, the word giant that we have in the English translation of the Bible is actually in Hebrew, it's Gibberim. And Gibberim means the earthborn. Well, what does that mean? Those that were born on earth as a result of intermingling of DNA between the fallen angels and human women. And we see it throughout history. And I think we have it now. They've just got better at it. And I know I'm throwing some stuff out that people haven't heard before, but I believe it's true.
Okay, now, but there's more to your belief than just that, because you, from my understanding, is that generally when you get onto these subjects, you've also done the research behind it to back that up, correct?
Well, I have with what's available, and it's very hard to come across the research of it, but if you, like I said earlier, if you'll just do a simple search on the internet for transhuman studies, you will see colleges around the world that are developing curriculum to prosecute crimes committed by transhumans, to do crime scene investigations of a crime that may be committed by a transhuman, you know, and to develop the curriculum costs money. These people love money. They're not going to develop a curriculum that they don't think will be or is necessary for some time in the future. So, you know, we've got human proteins being put into rice DNA and being fed to people in Africa to prevent malaria. So they're intermingling human DNA with plant DNA right now. We know that Monsanto has developed foods that are, you know, they're Terminator technologies. It'll grow fruit this year, but next year if you want fruit, you've got to buy the Monsanto seed. And when you put it in your body, what are you doing to yourself? You don't have any idea what you're doing to yourself.
So, what, I mean, what do you think they're going to be doing with these transhumans? What would be their purpose?
Well, if you want a military, say you want a military, and as a person that believes in good and evil, you may have a problem if you've got a value system, or you've got morals that say, well, they haven't done anything to me, therefore I'm not going to take their life, or they haven't done anything, you know, to justify an invasion of the country. So someone may rise up and say, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore. When they wake up to the fact that the wars have been planned years in advance by people that we know are involved in a conspiracy to control every aspect of your life, not just what you do, where you live, but what you eat, what you drink, when you eat, when you drink, where you go, when you go, why, identify you, surveillance technology. So basically, by creating something that is not exactly human and not exactly animal, and if you can take human DNA and put it into plant DNA, then what's to prevent someone finding out what causes the bloodlust of a carnivorous animal? And can you take that DNA and intermingle it with the human DNA and make a warrior that doesn't care whether or not you've done anything to them or not? They just like to kill. Or if you want a warrior that can see in the dark, and you get an aspect of DNA in the eyes of an owl that allows them to see in the dark, well, you don't need the helmet anymore. You don't need the night vision goggles anymore. You can make a man that can see in the dark. But if you can take the humanity, I'm at a loss for words. If you can take the compassion out of a man to where they don't care right and wrong. They don't, what's right, what's wrong. They don't know. They don't care. They do what they're told. Perfect warriors.
So in a sense, you can see a lot of what they're doing or where their minds are going just in some of the science fiction movies and television programs that they've come up with.
Well, you know, at one time when you saw the Terminator movies, you thought, boy, that's really neat. But then when you consider that for the last 30 years, my son will be 29 years old in another month or so. When he was a kid, video games, they've changed a lot. You know, it was Mario Brothers. Now they're good at shooting. And we're seeing the technology from the science fiction movies at play in Iraq and Afghanistan right now, around the world. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania yesterday, the sheriff's department or the police department used sound weapons against American citizens. Now, you know, are they rioting? They may be, but they're using military weapons against people in this country, and the news is silent. You know, you got to find out about it from the BBC, and it happened in Pittsburgh. I mean, I don't know.
And one of the things that you've often brought up in some of your interviews is you watch symbology, and some of the symbology crosses over various periods of time, and also in that is being used between various religious factions. And those of us that have done any kind of research are starting to realize that symbology actually is out there in our faces every day. And yet dates and times and alignments and that sort of thing is nothing new. What's your feeling on all this?
Well, I've been listening, and that's what I try to do is listen. I talk a lot, but I try to listen. And I'm listening to President Obama, and that's hard to get my lips to say, President Obama, but I'm listening to him. And many times when he wants to have something passed, you hear the same words. Like, for instance, at the inauguration on January 20th, He said, the stars are aligned. Well, I didn't pay that a lot of mind. You know, that's rhetoric, or that's a figure of speech. Well, in February, he's in Denver, Colorado, signing the stimulus bill, and he says, the stars are aligned. And in May, he's wanting the health care bill passed. He's on the south lawn of the White House with Nancy Pelosi, and I think it was Charlie Rangel. I'm not positive. I could be wrong. But again, he says, we've got to get this passed by the last day of July. The stars are aligned. Well, I'm going, wow, you know, let's see what stars are aligned. So I go back, and I look at the moon phases, because I believe Barack Obama and his crew to be pagans, to be Luciferians.
And why do you believe that?
Well, basically because they're evil folks. They don't have the light. They're doing things that are bad and nasty and are going to put your kids and my grandkids in slavery. And that's not something that the God that I know would have any part of. So basically I go back, and on January 20th on the inauguration, there's a crescent moon. So I think, well, that's interesting. Well, what does a crescent moon mean, John? I mean, I didn't know, so I went, looked for the meaning of a crescent moon, and according to the Luciferians and the pagans, it's a period of great importance. So I'm thinking, well, you know, the inauguration's pretty important. I go back to February, I think might have been the 18th. He's in Denver, Colorado, and I say, well, what's the moon phase then? And I look, and it's 28 and a half days, whatever 28 and a half days is from January 20th, probably the 18th of February, another crescent moon. Well, what's he doing? He's signing the stimulus package that put America so far into debt that we will never be out. Well, I look at that. That's a synodic month in pagan, In paganism, that's a synodic month. That's very significant, and it's another crescent moon.
Synodic month meaning?
28 and a half days. It's a cycle of the moon in witchcraft, paganism, Satanism, Luciferianism, whatever name you want to call it. It's not Jehovah God. It's the God of this earth. Well, on May, when he's giving his speech, in May, there's a crescent moon when he's on the south lawn of the White House. That night is under another crescent moon. Well, he wanted it done by July the 31st, the last day of July. Well, that's another crescent moon. Not only is it a crescent moon, it's what's called as the eve of the Sabbat of the Harvest of Souls. Well, that's pretty important to me. You know, what does Harvest of Souls mean? Well, here we have a president that's trying to give us nationalized health care, basically saying, Melody, you can have the surgery you need, or your husband or your child can't, because, you know, they're over 60 or whatever the case may be. They're determining who lives and dies. Melody, I call that harvesting souls. You know, I don't know how far you want me to go with it, but it happened just, couple weeks ago. It was under what's called the waning gibbous moon when he was talking about something else. They're talking in coded speech so that they can say with all honesty, we told you what we were doing, you just weren't listening.
So in other words, and this I have often found this in some of the research, just looking at laws and things of this sort, that much of what is done out there, it's done in a devious way, but it's also done with our agreement, whether we realize it or not. And that seems to be kind of important to them, correct?
It is, and it's not only with our agreement, okay? But you know, people are afraid of being ridiculed. You know, where's your tinfoil hat? Is it too tight? Do you need one? I can sell you a tinfoil hat. I mean, I've been told a lot of things. But we're told in God's word that that's going to happen. You're going to be ridiculed. You're going to be persecuted. Because the truth, to a liar, they can't stand, Melody. So basically, people know, I mean, your spirit will tell you right from wrong. And people know when someone bad, whether it's Obama or your next-door neighbor, who you know you've had a feeling that something's going on in that house, but rather than confront it, you're like a little child. Whistle past the graveyard. It'll go away. If I close my eyes, it's really not there. And what's amazing is that we're going to be held responsible for what we know is true. Because if you know the truth and do nothing about it, Melody, we're complicit. If we remain silent, we're guilty. Well, we're saying, we know you're doing this, but I'm, you know, you're not doing it to me, so I'm not saying anything.
Well, the one thing that I would like to qualify somewhat, because, you, I mean, you're pointing this at Obama, and what's
not
going
just,
on?
Not just Obama. Obama is being, in my opinion, he's the one that they have chosen. The end game is here, folks. They're running the board. It's like they're heading to checkmate. They're jumping the checkers where they're getting kings. They're getting free reign because good people are doing nothing. People that know what's going on are silent. Obama's being used by the Illuminati, by the Council on Foreign Relations, by, you know, the Jesuits, by whoever the boogeyman is, and they're all interconnected. They're all on the same page. They all want to go to the same place. The only problem they have with one another is who's driving the bus. They all want to be driving the bus. But they're all headed and directed and going to the same place, and they know it. They want global government. They want world government. Their fight is over who's going to be in control, not where are we going. Whether it's Republicans or Democrats or communists or socialists or fascism or, you know, you pick any of the bad, you know, the bad boogeymen. They know where they're going, but they want the power. They want the control. They want the money. They want the fame. They want the fortune. That's their fight with one another.
And so what it seems like they're doing then, when you're talking about, you know, doing things like on the waxing or waning of the moon or the full moon or the crescent moon or whichever, you're saying that they find alignments or, again, numerology or timing, such as dates or years or months or hours or any of that, or being around certain monuments or things of that sort to be empowering? Is that?
Well, I think I understand what you're asking. Here's the thing. For every truth that the God of heaven gives, Satan has got 1,000 lies because he is a deceiver. He wants to give you a little bit of truth mixed with some deception and lead you off in a place that's going to take you nowhere. He wants to keep you distracted. Basically, even the Bible says in Colossians that the heavens declare the glory of God. So God's plan is in the sky. We can look at a night sky and you and I say the stars are beautiful. I can look at Leo the lion, and rather than, or, you know, whatever, I'm not familiar with this astronomy or astrology, but I can look at the lion and I may say, well, that's the lion of the tribe of Judah. I may look at Virgo and say, that's the Virgin Mary. I may look at, you know, and see the gospel in the stars, but they have corrupted it and changed it. They believe they get their power and their magic from the horoscope. That's why they do things under the sign of the moon and the stars. That's why they do their things at night, because evil people do things basically in the dark to hide.
But they're not hiding. That's what's so interesting about it, is because by using a language that can mean one thing for one person and another thing for another person, and to speak it in such a manner that in one speech, they can be talking to the their cohorts and peers, and at the same time being talking to the public. They both get a different meaning, and both walk away feeling that, you know, they've heard what they wanted to hear.
That's true, and that Albert Pike put it in a way, and I have to paraphrase it because I haven't got his writings with me. But basically, even between, in Freemasonry, for instance, you've got your entered apprentice and your lower levels of Freemasonry, and they intentionally mislead and deceive their own initiates. And as they come along and they come to understanding, and they say, and the upper levels of Freemasonry see that they're understanding what's being said, then they're elevated. So basically, it's even deceit and deception among those that are involved. And for you to get to the presidency of the United States, or for you to get to the head of the World Bank, or for you to get to the head of the Federal Reserve, you know, you've got to know what's going on. They're not going to give you the control of the money of the world unless they know that you're one of theirs. I'm here to tell you that I believe that everyone in our government that's in an upper level, since Satan was given control of this earth, you know, he's the prince and the power of the air, that everyone that's in a position of authority throughout this world in every country is not serving the God that we're serving. They're serving Satan. They know what one another are doing, and once again, look, Obama's problem with Ahmadinejad is who's going to be in power. They're serving the same God. I'm sorry, folks, but they're serving the same God. Whether it's Tony Blair, whether it's Nelson Mandela, I don't care who it is. If you're in control over a country, this world, and you live through it, you're one of their folks.
You know, this in its own right, what we're discussing right now is hitting on that realm of the duality, because I can see many people saying, there's no way in heck that what we see coming from our leaders is true intent. They go through the motions, and even though, you know, they don't always come through on the other side, you can tell that they're trying to get laws passed or stop things from happening or prevent wars or make sure that like health, we're going to get health care. The really hard part for those of us that see that there's more to it than just what we see on the surface, it's kind of like a mask, is to really, well, I think you and I are coming from the same spot on this, and what made you start digging deeper to see what's behind that facade?
Well, basically, I'm sure some of your listeners may have heard me on RBN. I drive a truck, and I was in the country in Tennessee, little micro station, and I heard RBN on the radio. And I thought I was listening to something similar to Art Bell. I mean, they were telling me things over the radio about my government, about my country, about what I had been taught, about what I had believed, and I'm thinking they're nuts. You know, these people are crazy. Well, time went by, and I had heard what I had heard on RBN. I'm hearing on Fox News, but it's 2-3 months after I heard it on RBN. Now, when John Stantmiller was telling me what's coming down the line, I'm thinking, this guy's a nut. Well, 3 months later, it's on CNN. I'm thinking, well, they're either connected, they know what's going on, or what they have is the truth. And so as a Christian, I don't want to waste my time, Melody, on chasing, something that's non-existent or something that's foolishness or a waste of my time. We all have better things to do. And this was about 5 years ago. So as a Christian believing in God, I said a simple prayer. God, I'm hearing things that I don't know what to think about. If it's something that I shouldn't be wasting my time on, then you need to take this desire to learn more of it away from me. You've got to. Because if it's a waste of time, I believe your mind is basically this tremendous God created a computer that's able to do a lot. And I know that when images go in to your mind, they're there forever. When sounds go into your ears, they're there forever. You can push them back, but they're always there. And I, you know, as a kid, I heard this song, you know, be careful, little eyes, what you see, little ears, what you hear. So I said, God, if I'm wasting my time, or if I'm in an area that is not your wish for my life, then take me away from it. But God, if it's true, you're going to have to help me to understand this, because it's beyond me. I don't have, Melody, I don't have the intelligence or the education to say, John figured this out. I wouldn't in any way say, this is, you know, years of study and hard work and sleepless nights and all that other baloney. This is things that have been coming to me, and I don't want to sound like a holy roller, but the understanding has been coming to me. The dots have been connected easily. I don't always like it. I don't always necessarily understand it fully. And even now, I haven't got it all figured out. But I pray for understanding and discernment. And God can't lie. And if he can't lie, and he says in Jeremiah chapter 33, verse 3, call unto me, and I will hear thee. I will answer thee and show you great and mighty things that thou knowest not. If he meant that, and I go to him sincerely and ask him to do it, if he's God and he can't lie, not only can he do it, he will do it. And he has done it.
Okay, but you didn't stop there. You didn't just stop there and accept that. You went and started doing research on a lot of this information, and because there's a history there that backs up a lot of what you're talking about, and many of us, you know, I mean, when I first heard of mythology, the first, you know, I thought it wasn't, you know, there was no way it could be true. But then again, somewhere down the line, something told me, you know, there may be more truth to this mythology than I realized. But of course, I, you know, that wasn't an aspect that I really got in school. Anything that I had to later back it up, I had to go and read up about. And I'll have to admit, there's still a lot of things there. I'm still a, you know, hardly know anything about it. But there's something that's telling me that when you start seeing them doing genetically modifying corn and tomatoes and things like that,
well,
it tells me
if God created everything. And I would say he's pretty smart. He's probably omnipotent, omniscient, I mean, he's God, for goodness sakes. So if he made it, then you can take it to the bank. Listen to me, folks. He did it right. So when he finished his creation, he said, he looked at it, and this is a paraphrase, and it was good. But somewhere down the line, man is determined and decided that, well, you know, that tomato was juicy, and it was red, and I could tell it was a tomato. But wouldn't it be nice to have a tomato the size of a slice of bread so you could slice it and cover the bread with one slice? And genetic engineers said, you know what, we can do that. It's called a beefsteak. Someone else says, well, you know, I like white corn on the cob. Someone says, I like yellow corn on the cob. It tastes good. Well, you know, well, I like them both. Well, we can do that. It's called peaches and cream. It's genetically modified. We can make it sweeter. Here's the problem I have with that. Man, in his arrogance, Melody, has said that they can improve. Now, listen to this, folks. Improve on the creation of the Creator. The very God that made man, we're going to improve on his handiwork. That sounds pretty, not only arrogant, but that sounds like placing yourself in the position of the Most High. God created man. He did it miraculously, whether it was, you know, the dust of the earth, which I believe it was. I believe the Bible. Satan, when he was cast out of heaven, was thrown as a bolt of lightning to the earth because he was going to put himself in that position. He's not a miracle worker, folks. Yeah, he's got minions. He's got power. He can deceive, but he can't do miracles. So basically, as a result, if he wants to be God, he's got one way to do it. Knowledge, science, genetic engineering, technology. What's he doing? He's making man in his image. He's making his creatures. Is it Greek mythology? Is that Greek mythology? You know, if you understand thermodynamics, I think it's the second law of thermodynamics, talks about degradation, talks about decay. So if you're near the creation of the earth, like Adam and Eve were, chances are you were a more perfect human being, genetically. We know that they were. They were the direct handiwork of God. They were perfect, genetically perfect. So the farther away you get from the creation, does it make sense to think that man is improving or is man degrading?
Well, you said bold blood.
Here's where I'm going with this, is that okay. Greek mythology, I believe, and it would take a lot to convince me otherwise, was not mythology at all. It was genetic engineering gone awry, man's attempt at being God. The science wasn't exactly there yet. Are they getting better at it? Are they in Washington? Are they in the state governments? Probably so, folks. The Bible says, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the Son of Man.
You said a bolt of lightning. Now, would that have any reference to maybe the Swedish, is it Swedish, the Thor god? Wasn't he, or was that Greek again?
Well, I'm not sure about the Greek gods and the Titans and all of that. That's hard for me to follow, but I do believe that they were hybrid creations, that they were results of the offspring of fallen angels and human women. Once again, they were men of renown. They were giants. And when you tell someone, I mean, think about this. Goliath, according to the Bible and according to my ability to translate weights and measures, Goliath was over 10 or 12 foot tall. The head of his spear was over 13 pounds. The length of the shaft of the spear was 18 feet. It was 3 inches in diameter. And he used it as a weapon. He threw it. And he didn't throw it 10 feet. He threw it. So these people were super, I don't want to say superhuman, but they were giants. They were men of renown. They had entire armies that feared them because of their size. In Numbers 22, when Moses sent his spies into the land of Canaan, they came back scared to death. They said, we're like grasshoppers in their sight. And they meant it. That's not word pictures. It's true. Josephus, an early Jewish historian, said that they kept the bones of these giants on display up until the time that Christ was walking the earth, because they knew they existed, and they kept them on display. Well, where are they now?
Well, haven't they found evidence of that?
Well,
in various places?
I've seen some photographs. I've got a picture on my blog of one. I think the title of the blog, it's been a year or so, was called As It Was in the Days of Noah. And, I mean, it shows a couple of Middle Eastern men next to a grave that they dug up that had something in it that looked like a humanoid form that was pretty big. We've got a disease now that they call gigantism. We've all seen it on television, on, different learning channel or history or whatever it is. Is it a disease? Is it a disease? Is it a birth defect, or is it a lingering remnant of some hanky-panky that had been going on a couple thousand years ago?
Well, even when I go out into the forest and go into some of these log cabins that some of these miners had built, often you have to duck down, and I'm only like 5'6", and I find myself having to duck down to even go into these things, and I have to wonder, well, if you've got all these trees around you, why would you build something so small? And yet, my understanding is these guys were probably much smaller. So, even within our you know, recent history, the difference in sizes is not that inconceivable.
Well, we can see a result. I mean, and I know when I was a young kid, and I don't know why I'm going here, but I was the little kid in school. I was 4'10", 85 pounds in high school. 2 years later, when I went into the military, I was 5'2", 130. 6 weeks later, folks, after eating, I don't know what they fed us, but 6 weeks later, I had grown 8 inches and gained 40 pounds in basic training. Now, I don't know if it was something that I was getting in the food, but I grew 8 inches in 6 weeks. Now, that sounds crazy, but it happened.
And it didn't affect your health or anything?
Well, not that I know of. I mean, I don't get sick. You know, I hesitate saying things like this because I'm not a conspiracy nut. I'm somebody that looks at facts and I consider the information and I say, well, John, if you were in a court and you were on a jury and you're presented with information, guilty or not guilty, does a conspiracy exist or is it your dream? And I've come to the conclusion that it exists. And what's upsetting to the powers that be is when you're vocal about it. And you try to present information on local talk radio and people won't touch it. You know, you try to, because they're one of you, which really in effect they're an agent provocateur, they're controlled opposition. They know what's true. They'll say one thing to your face and on the radio, there's no mention of it. They'll say something to you in an email, and when you approach it on the internet, on the radio, not the internet, you approach it on the radio, it's like, I don't have the time to get into this conspiracy stuff. Well, it's a word in the dictionary. It says conspiracy. It's where two or more people, conspire together to perform an illegal act. It's all around us. The only act that they don't want you to know about is this act to take us into a global government, this act to enslave not only America but the world, this act, this illegal act that's going to determine when you go to sleep, how long are you going to sleep, where are you going to sleep. Well, you're in a house with 5 bedrooms with 2 people. We can't have that. We're going to take your home. I don't know how to explain it except to say that it's there. And it's real.
Well, one of the things that, you're asking questions. And that's the whole thing is when you start asking questions, you start finding more questions, not necessarily always the answers. I had somebody send me an email the other day and made an incorrect statement, which made me, because I knew this person was very well educated and very well read, it started me off looking to see, well, why did this person have this information and what I had recalled reading was different? And when then I went to start trying to find the information to back up my thoughts or their thoughts, it got me off in a whole nother direction, and I started watching. And it was about a person that I've been trying to follow for about maybe 10 years now, even though I've actually indirectly paid attention to this person because I'd heard about him back in the 70s because he'd bought land down in the San Luis Valley. Well, it got me back. It seems like just about every once or twice a year I go off studying this person because I'm finding that These movers and shakers in the world have backgrounds like you can't believe. They have belonged to more organizations than doesn't even seem possible. And I was trying to find his relationship to a cousin. And that's the best I can find at this point in time, that she is a cousin of Maurice Strong. And Maurice Strong turns up all over the place. There are people that either have never heard of him because he usually works behind the scenes, or they claim he's one of the more powerful men on the earth. And when I went into studying, looking at this cousin that I'd heard here and there and read about in a book or two that when I started looking at him, I went and found that this lady was not only just a cousin, but wow, this is where this man's whole background could be coming from on what's happening with China and Russia. And I realize now that her name has not been spoken of near enough, because she is a huge, she affected Stalin and Trotsky and people like that, but she started back in the union movement back at the turn of the century in this country. And then she moved on over into various parts of Russia and then into China. You know, I'd seen it as little as 2 years, but then when I started looking at it and started figuring the dates, no, you're talking 12, 14 years. And I believe was buried in a prominent place around one of the major dignitaries, and it could have been Mao. I don't have it in front of me right at the moment. But here you go, when you start digging, looking for just one item.
Well, see, when I get into research, Melody, I don't go looking for anything that backs up what I believe. I really don't, and I'm not talking down on anyone that does that. When I do my research, I simply look facts. Is this true? Can I document this? And I let it take me where it takes me. And as a result, sometimes it takes me places and I'm sitting dumbfounded. And I say, well, I didn't want to go there. And then a little voice says, well, you wanted the truth, didn't you? Well, sometimes the truth causes you to shift your belief systems. Now, when I say shift your belief systems, the gospel is the gospel. But the way that we understand the Bible, for the most part, for a lot of people, is what have you been taught? Well, then you've got to ask yourself, well, I've been taught this and such. Well, who taught you that? Well, so-and-so. Well, who taught them? Well, so-and-so. Man is, for the most part, doing the teaching, and we as believers, or we as, you know, whether you're a believer or not, we tend to take the word of the people that have been our teachers, or a word that I don't like, our mentors, or, you know, who do you trust? Rather than ask yourself the question, God gave you a mind. You have the information. Why can't you come and reach your own conclusions? Trust yourself. I mean, if my life and death and eternity depend on the truth, then it's up to me to get it, not just from John, but to get it from God, because my eternity is in the balance. You know, I've got a responsibility. So ask yourself when you go to school, your kids are in college, and they're coming home with these crazy thoughts. Who taught their teacher? Well, who taught their teacher's teacher? And on and on and on. Take it back to the beginning. Take it back to Plato. Take it back to Copernicus and ask yourself, who taught Copernicus? Somebody did. And the ultimate knowledge, the only true knowledge, comes from God. If it doesn't come from God, it comes from Satan. If it comes from Satan, it's deception. So if you want the truth, you're only going to get the truth from God Almighty.
One of the ironies, though, that I'm finding out and is being proved to me more and more is watching that we're being shown the truth through somebody else's eyes, even though we experience it, and somebody's telling us, well, this is what the truth is, even though what we see defies what they say. But if we still listen to them enough, we find that maybe we become unsure of ourselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And actually, I don't know if that's why you brought it up, but there's a technology that's called augmented reality. And we see the speed that they have with computers. We know that they've got this digital technology, this digital transition. We're beaming sound and image to satellites and back to the Earth, literally at the speed of light. The computers are fast enough to change images, to change audio in fraction of a fraction of a second. So basically, truth can be rewritten. We're watching it live, fair and balanced on Fox or CNN, or take your pick of any of the networks. Consider where they're coming from. Consider their agenda. Can you get the truth? Can you get the truth mixed with lies? Can they augment reality and make you see in what you believe to be real time something that's occurring? Say, for instance, Katrina, and that's just out of the blue. But say Katrina's happening, and you're watching things transpire over the television, but you're not in Katrina. You're not in New Orleans. Can you really believe that what you're seeing is what's happening? Or are they giving a different truth than what's going on the ground? I told my pastor at church, I said, look, and he's intelligent and he knows the truth. I said, if you ever see on the news and they're saying John is doing this, don't believe them, because you know me, I wouldn't do that. But if something happens, I'm telling all of your listeners, and it's, John D. in Tennessee is doing such and such, don't believe it, because the truth is a lie, for the most part. We hear it in song lyrics. We see it on television. There's been occurrences, I'm sure, for everyone that's listening to me. I could have swore that David Crosby died years ago, but he's alive. I could have swore that Ernest Borgnine died a couple of years ago, but he's alive. So, I mean, it's hard. And according to the Bible, it's going to be so deceptive in the end days that if it were possible, even the elect would be deceived and believe the lie.
Even if you didn't come from that background of belief in the Bible and God and that sort, what would be your suggestions to people on how to view and look at some of what is going on so that you're not just taking everybody else's word for it? I mean, granted, for those that are well rooted in the belief in the Bible and that sort, what would you suggest?
My advice would be what a drill sergeant gave me when I went into the Air Force 35 years ago. I got off the bus in at Lackland Air Force Base at about 2:30 in the morning, and it was literally like I had arrived at the gates of hell. This man came out making me wish I was never born. Now, I don't know how they did it to an 18-year-old kid, but scared the living bejeevers out of me. And later on through that time in basic training, he said, John, you're going to do fine if you'll just do one thing. I said, what's that, Tech Sergeant? He said, believe none of what you hear and only half of what you see, and you'll get along just fine. Now, I didn't know what that meant until about 5 years ago. And all of a sudden, those words came back to me when the scales fell off of my eyes, and the wax melted off of my ears, and I woke up out of this stupor that they had put me in for 45 years of my life. When I came awake, I heard my tech sergeant say, believe none of what you hear and only half of what you see, and you'll get along fine. So I would tell people, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear, and you'll get along fine.
So
basically, don't trust anyone. Let God be true and every man a liar. Do your homework. Use your mind.
One of the things that, because when you did start listening to various radio programs, some of which are on the internet, because that's the only way that I would, be hearing them. I see that you continue on and you continue to call in and talk about your thoughts with various programs. And what makes you feel compelled to do this? And even though, like you say, often say that, or you seem to be wary of the fact that you could be taken as a conspiracy person. What is your driving force there?
Well, first of all, I'm not weary. If I'm considered, if I'm considered a conspiracy theorist or a domestic terrorist for trying to speak the truth, to me, that's a great honor, because for them to label you as a threat means that they have to think that you're doing something threatening. And if I'm threatening, you know, this evil that's all around us, I'm pleased. I'm well pleased. But there's times, Melody, when I get tired, I get burnt out, I get spent, I can't study anymore, I can't write anymore, and I take a break. And I think to myself, when I stop my writing, when I stop my research, I'm done. I quit. No one's listening. No one's waking up. You know, I quit. And after about 2 or 3 days, I could no more stop doing what I'm doing than I could voluntarily hold my breath until I died. Not until I passed out, but just to breathe no more and kill myself by suffocation by holding my breath. That can't happen. So I can't quit doing this. This is something that's in me. It's something that I know it is a calling. We are all called to do what we can do to spare others, you know, especially if you're coming from a biblical perspective. And I can't deny that any more than I could deny, you know, quit doing what I'm doing. God's real. His word is real. We're told not to plant seeds one at a time. We're told to sow seeds. You know, sowing is different than planting. Sowing is handfuls. Throw it out. I don't care where it falls. I'm going to put it out. And if it grows, it grows. If it dies, it dies. I've got a bag of seed that never gets empty. I'm throwing seed out, whether it's gospel seed or seed of truth. You know, there's something that I believe, Melody, that connects. When people hear truth, they hear people that have been, you know, called nuts and made fun of and ridiculed on the radio, and they hear that happening, and something in their spirit or in their heart or in their mind says, well, I've been feeling that. I'm not all alone. Maybe what I'm feeling is, you know, I thought that once, and I'm not alone. Well, if you wake one person up, Melody, to the fact that this is going on, then that's one more. And I hesitate to use the term warrior, but that's one more adversary of evil that's awakening. And that's what it's all about. That's our only hope, is for people to wake up. And if, you know, look at it this way. If you're standing on a railroad track, and I've got the train scheduled, and you've got your back to the train, and it's barreling down the track, you have no idea that it's coming. I see the train. I know it's coming. I've got the schedule. I know, you know, I may not know the exact minute, but I know it's due to arrive at X and X. And I leave you on the track, and the train's coming. And I don't say, Melody, get off the track. There's a train coming. It's going to get you. That's not saying boo, boogie, scare you. That's a responsibility to preserve someone's life or to possibly help someone preserve their eternity, because the Bible being true, heaven's real, hell's real, good's real, evil's real, wages are real. If you do a good job, you expect good pay. If you do a bad job, hey, you know, you won't get paid in money necessarily, but you will be judged. Judgment's coming, payday's coming. So, you know, look, I'm going to make this very simple. I care for people I've never met. You know why? Because someone cared for me that I never met, but he cared for me. And we've got a responsibility to care about what happens to Melody or John or David or Michael in New York, whoever's listening. I've never met these people, but they're kindred spirits, and I care about them. I care about the bum on the street. When I see a prostitute on the street in Nashville, I don't say that the dirty old thing, get away from me. I look at him or her, and I say, you know, that's somebody's son. Or that's somebody's daughter. If it's a drug addict, I said, that could be my son or my daughter. I thank God it's not. But somewhere there's a parent that is missing a child, and they're wondering, are they alive? Are they dead? What are they doing?
Well, one of the things, when you're talking about waking up and whatever, one of the most interesting part of that, I was walking up, taking a walk. It was last year, and I got up to the top of this it wasn't a mountain, but it was a good-sized hill. And I got up to the top, and I noticed that all the trees had pinion nuts on them. And I looked around and go, now, how did I miss that? And all the way down, I noticed the trees had them everywhere. And it was just that I wasn't even focused on it. And one of the reasons why I bring this up is because you say, you know, you work around the Nashville area and probably Memphis. Do you go through Memphis too?
Well, occasionally, but not very often.
Well, these areas have a lot of monuments and symbolisms that we walk around and work around every day and don't even think anything about. And yet, why are they there?
Well, Nashville, Tennessee, I did an article on that on my website. There's parallels between Nashville and ancient Pergamus. I mean, Nashville, you may or may not be aware, there's a exact replica of the Parthenon of Pericles in a park in Nashville. Same size, same dimensions, an exact replica that was built for Nashville's centennial. You know, our state capital is modeled after a Roman temple. We've got the War Memorial. We've got, you know, our capital is on a hill. Ancient Pergamus was on a hill. At the base of the hill, they had a mall with columns and bells and music. Well, for Nashville's bicentennial, or Tennessee's bicentennial, they actually built a mall at the base of the foot of the hill that the Capitol sits on with columns and bells. So Nashville has its Stoia.
What is Stoia?
Well, Stoia is a mall. It's, you know, okay. it's like a park. We've got the Coliseum that's to the east of the mall in Nashville. Well, in Pergamus, to the east of the mall, they had a Coliseum. To the east of Nashville is a city called Lebanon. To the southeast of Nashville, there's a city called Smyrna. These are all cities that are in relative relation to ancient Pergamus. You know,
and Pergamus is...
Pergamus, according to what I've been able to determine, was the center of creation back in, you know, in ancient times. They sacrificed, you know, they sacrificed in their temples. Even to the point where our football stadium, when it was erected, was called the Coliseum. Well, who plays in our Coliseum, the football team? Well, it's the Titans. You know, I mean, it's not the Nashville football players, it's the Nashville Titans. Well, what are Titans? Titans are demigods. I mean, the whole area, there's a tremendous Masonic influence in Nashville. Nashville is called what? The Music City. Well, who was Satan? Satan was God's, minister of worship. I mean, according to the Bible, he made tremendous, beautiful sounds. He had a beautiful voice. He was strong to earth like a bolt of lightning. Well, what is lightning? Lightning's electricity. Without electricity, you don't have the modern-day entertainment that we have with the music. You know, you don't have... we've got a church here in Nashville that's called the Grand Ole Opry. They call it the Mother Church of Country Music. It was originally built so that any visiting minister would have a place to preach the gospel. It's called the Ryman Auditorium. Well, they haven't used it for a church service in probably 90 years. They hold country music sing-alongs on Friday and Saturday, you know, the Grand Ole Opry, the mother church of country music. Nashville boasts one of the largest adult bookstores in the country, or in the world, according to the Billboard. So we've got pornography, the largest pornographic bookstore in the country, supposedly, is in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got Larry Flint's got a Hustler store in Nashville, Tennessee, the Southern Baptist Convention. You know, this is the Bible of the, it's the buckle of the Bible Belt. We're in Nashville, Tennessee. Southern Baptist Convention is in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got all of this, and then in Revelation, I can't recall exactly which chapter, it talks about God talking to the church of the Nicolaitans, the things that Christ hated. He said he knew where Satan's seat was. So I'm wondering, Melody, if I'm not sitting next to the seat of Satan here in Nashville, Tennessee. I mean, I'm not fearful of it. I mean, I don't want to go breaking into his house, but, you know, he's somewhere. If he's in control of this earth, he's somewhere. He's not omnipresent. He's living somewhere. He's a spirit, but he's somewhere.
So what it kind of looks like then is Nashville was a planned city. It didn't just grow these monuments organically, or did they?
No, I think not only is it a planned city, but you can see even according to the longitude and latitude of a lot of cities in this country, they're there for a reason. They were put there for a reason. Denver, Colorado is, you know, that's the Mile High City. Washington, D.C. is, you know, it's near sea level. Obama went from east to west and was elevated. I mean, is it the Antichrist? I don't know, but he's sure filling the bill. You know, where does he say he's from? Well, he says he's from Hawaii. Where does the Antichrist come from, according to Revelation? Out of the sea. You know, we've got, and I know I'm getting off the topic here, but we've got CNN, back when he was running for president, he's kind of like a Messiah figure. Someone else, you know, the women, he spoke and women fainted. You know, there's people that have called him the savior of the world. In Cairo, Egypt, at his recent trip, they were saying that he was the new Tutankhamun. Well, who's King Tut? King Tut was a pharaoh. Well, what's a pharaoh? Well, pharaoh was the son of Ra, the sun god. Well, what does that make Obama? He's the son of God. Is he the Christ, the savior of the world, or the Antichrist? I don't know. He's not Jesus Christ, but he's fitting the bill.
But I have heard the term, term for Barak is lightning bolt, correct?
Well, I did a translation on that. Barack Hussein Obama. If you translate his name using Arabic, Persian, and Kenyan, in Arabic, Barak means the blessed one. I may have this wrong. It might be Persian. Hussein means the chosen one. And Obama in Kenyan, which is supposed to be his father's dialect, means crooked or zigzag. So in one way, his name means the blessed one chosen to be crooked. And I hope he's listening. You can do it another way using Hebrew and Latin. In Hebrew, Barak means lightning. Bama means high place, heavenly place, heaven. And to connect the two, you use a letter O or U in Latin. It's connector, joins them, and it means of or from. So in Hebrew and Latin, his name means lightning from heaven. Well, who in the Bible is called lightning from heaven? Who was thrown like lightning from heaven? Satan, Lucifer. You know, I mean, names mean things, Melody. So we need to understand that. This is the first time in history that I can find where all four players in this presidential election had biblical names. Barack, Joseph, John, and Sarah. Barack was, you know, he wouldn't go into battle without Deborah. You know, Joseph was the husband of Mary. John McCain's name translated, interestingly enough, in Gaelic is John, son of Cain. Well, who was Cain in the Bible? Sarah in the Bible, what was her thing? The angel said she was going to have a baby and she laughed. Well, what was the controversy all throughout Sarah Palin's campaign was not only did her daughter become pregnant, but her own son was born with Down syndrome. So there's parallels. History is circular. We were talking about that earlier. History is circular. A little bit different, but the players are similar, the circumstances are similar, and we're repeating history.
Okay, but I could just see plenty of people saying, well, that's just sheer coincidence and that sort, and yet at the same time, is it? And again, I want to really kind of bring home the fact that, okay, it didn't begin with Barack Obama. I mean, there's a lot to say that each president is chosen, that they're not elected, that we get to make a choice possibly between those that have been chosen, and we get an either or of their choice. And I just did an interview just recently with Bev Harris, and I'll be playing that this week, that pretty much shows that the elections for sure are going to be controlled again, because they've hired criminals, convicted criminals, to design the software, and they knew that. They knew this 6 or 8 years ago, but they keep, not only do they keep using the same people, but they're consolidating the companies down to just a couple.
Well, they've got their hands, you know, we're in a stranglehold. I know you may have heard me, but on another program this morning, I think that we're, America, if something doesn't happen, if Americans don't determine to really live for the truth, America's in its death throes. You know, was this election controlled? Absolutely. Is every presidential election controlled? I think it's to the point where for years we believed that we chose our president. I don't know that we ever have. We get who they think we will tolerate. We're so close to the end of their game that the end game is on, and they're going to give it to us whether we want it or not, because what are we going to do to stop them? I mean, look at the technology that they have. We can't really stop them physically unless people really drastically wake up and say, you know what, enough's enough. I'm not going down this road. We've got to understand that what we're doing today is going to affect our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren. And I know, you know, well, what am I worried about it for? If it's five generations from now, I've got a responsibility to the people that, to my posterity, whether it's five generations down the road, if, you know, if things don't just come to an abrupt end, I've got a responsibility to do what's right. That's what I said earlier today, that if we know the truth and we do nothing, then we're just as bad as the people that are perpetrating, because we're complying, we're complicit. We're saying, you know, I know this is going on, but it's not affecting me, so the heck with it. And we're going to stand accountable for what we do or don't do. You know, what's the old saying, that evil succeeds because good men do nothing? There's something to that effect. We've got to do something, even if we fail. I don't want to draw my last breath knowing, John, you didn't do anything. I mean, can you imagine what that would be like if Melody or Michael or Jack or pick a name did nothing, and they knew they could have done something to even, you know, to get into the fight? I mean, there's nothing worse. And I'll tell you for a fact, than growing up in Detroit and getting in a fight and never getting a punch in. You know, I've been there. I don't like it. I'm not doing it anymore. When I was a little 4'10" kid with 85 pounds in high school, and somebody tell me to do something, and, you know, you got a 26-inch arm reach and they've got a 38, you can't touch them. You can't even get a punch in. Well, you got to do something. You've got to attack the attack. And I said it earlier, whether it's physical, mental, or spiritual, get in the fight, folks, because you've got everything to lose. Pain, if it's physical, I can tell you, it doesn't last forever. Yeah, it hurts, but it goes away. But if you do nothing, man, eternity is a long time to know, I didn't do anything.
Well, you know, with all of what you're saying, and you're coming from a person that doesn't see that there's anything going on or that there's anything wrong, what do you feel, what is it that you're trying to get across to the people is the ultimate goal, not just the fact that you know, evil triumphs over good if we don't do or say anything about what's the lies and the deceptions that are going on around us in our governments, and I mean, this is very obvious just right now with our monetary system, and how even though it's fabricated money, there is our labors are tied to that fabricated money. Our assets is tied to that fabricated money, and they're it is being taken out of the country, given to people that obviously don't deserve trillions of dollars. I mean, how could anybody deserve trillions of dollars? But this is happening, and if we don't stand up and say something now, they will come back and do it again, because when those that are criminal, that take advantage, will come back and do it over and over again. So when do we stand up, and when do we hold them accountable?
Well, I have to go back and just say, first of all, that our money is a fiction anyway. Okay, these people, Melody, are so good at what they've done, that they've taken something that has absolutely no value. It had no value when they formed the Federal Reserve, when they went off the gold standard, when they went to a currency that was controlled by private bankers. It was paper. It had no value. But they're so good that they gave it an implied value. Let you play with it a while. Let you prosper. Let you buy cars and clothing and food. You know, they put an implied value on it. And then when the time was right for them, they inflate it, they deflate it, they confiscate it, they make it worth less, and bear in mind that it was worthless when they made it.
How do you make something worthless, more worthless?
They make it worth less than worthless. That's pretty tricky. but they've done it. And I know it's almost to the point of being absurd. But money's nothing anyway, and we're told not to pile it up. You know, send your treasures to heaven, folks. I mean, do what's right, and you'll be rewarded by the one that's the judge over all, good and evil. I mean, yeah, we all need it. We need to live in it. We need to have it to live. But at the same time, man, money to me, it's paper. It's a means. It's a necessary evil. I have to have it because I want my wife and my grandkids and my children and myself to eat. I don't want to perish, but I've got to have it. But you know what? If I lost it tomorrow, and I lost my job tomorrow, and John got hungry, if the God of the Bible could feed the wandering children of Israel with manna from heaven, and he doesn't change, and he tells me in his word not to take any thought for what I'm going to eat, or what I'm going to drink, or what clothes I'm going to put on, I can take him at his word. And if I get hungry, my faith is to the point where I believe I could find me a deep puddle, and God, knowing that I'm hungry and I have no ability to earn a living because they've taken my job and they've devalued my money and they've debased the currency and they've confiscated, you know what, and I'm not going to lie, I've got some gold. I look for it to be confiscated. You know, they confiscate your gold and your silver and you have nothing and you're hungry. That God is able, if I stick my hand in a puddle, for me to come up with a fish. You know, I believe it. He did it for his disciples. They said, hey, the fish is no good. He said, throw the net on the other side of the boat. You know, poor paraphrase, but they did it and they filled the net. Paul had to pay taxes. Christ told him, go get a fish. Take the coin out of its mouth. You know, pay your taxes. God is still a miracle-working God. And if he chooses to have me die starvation, guess what? Then it'll be okay. My life, if I live to be 150 as a man, is still immeasurably short in relation to eternity. I mean, he went to the cross for me. If I've got to give my life as a martyr, or I've got to experience some kind of a turmoil or some kind of a tribulation, hey, that's small stuff. You know, I don't know how to put it any other way. I trust him. I trust him enough to take care of me through eternity. Why couldn't I trust him day by day?
Well, one of the things that it becomes obvious to me is the fact that, okay, if they've got something that isn't worth anything, and yet at this point in time, what they're really after is the debt, and watching, you know, the 90s when everybody was given credit card, and told to go out and spend, and then turn around later on and tell us how how terrible we've been because irresponsible. We did it. Yes. Yeah. And, well, and what a bad thing it was to abuse the things of the planet and the earth because we did it. And yet the very people that were telling us to do the one are now telling us the other. And we don't call them on it. We sit there and blame ourselves over this. Now I'm not saying we shouldn't be blameless, but what I'm saying is we gotta, you know, it isn't just, we've been programmed to be the way that we have. And at this point in time, those of us that are trying to stop this programming are running into some real major stumbling blocks when I find somebody like Maurice Strong sitting on, I spent last night watching an hour interview with this person who's telling us how he set up the Earth Summit and how in the environment is the thing to protect, and they're destroying the borders for the sovereignty of the resources of the planet. And what it really is, if you really dig into this person's background, he didn't just hang around with the good people. He hang around with some of the most corrupt beings there are on this planet. But you have to start digging and start finding out who these guys hang around with. And they all hang around with each other and pat each other on the back, give each other every kind of award going, and join every group that they possibly can and pass their money back and forth, but they're not very good at wanting to pass it down to the people that they're trying to take the money that they have worked for, and blame the woes of the planet on them as opposed to who's the ones that are really in charge.
Well, see, we've stuck our foot in a snare, Melody. We know the Bible says the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender, or slave to the lender is a better translation. So you get your foot in the snare of debt. As a result, you see what you can have today. You go further into debt. Now you're hooked. Now what do you do? Well, you can work. You can go home and sleep and come back to work. You don't have time to pick up a newspaper and read the lies. Turn on Fox, that's easy. Turn on CNN, that's easy. Be fed the propaganda. Believe the lie. You don't have time to do what you and I are doing, to go dig and to study and to really look deep and connect dots. You don't have time for that. There's a guy that was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. His name's Edward Bernaysi. He wrote a book called Propaganda. This is back, I think, in the mid or late 20s. And on page 71 in Propaganda, he asked a question in the form, he made a statement in the form of a question, and it was this. If we, and this is pretty close, I'm doing it from memory. If we understand the methods and mindset of the group mind, is it not possible for us to manipulate the masses according to our will without their knowing about it? Now that's what's happened, because through advertising, through music, through media, we've been pushed along incrementally. It's like, I'm a guy from the city, but I moved to Tennessee. I had a horse given to me. It was 4 years old. Never been touched by human hands. How do you break a wild Mustang? I had no idea. So I went and got a book on John Rainey, the original horse whisperer. And I'm studying this book, and I'd read it, and I'd go down, I'd work with my daughter's crazy horse. And you know what? This stuff's working. But it was by desensitizing the horse, by gaining the horse's confidence, by letting it know you're not going to hurt it. Melody, in 2 months, this guy that was from the city of Detroit, that never lived on a lot that was larger than 30 by 40 in his life, was sitting on the back of a wild horse with a saddle, with the horse not so much as raising the cloud of dust, because I had desensitized it to the point where it let me on its back. It put saddle on. It wasn't like you see in the Westerns, a buck and bronco. It was, hey, you're here. What do you want me to do? You're the boss. And we've been put through that system of desensitization with incrementalism, with you know, with a horse, when you see the nose holes flare and you see the ears lay back and the whites of the eyes, you know they're scared. You turn around and walk away. Well, they've been playing the same game on us for hundreds of years. When they know you're under pressure, when they know no way, no how will you tolerate it, they back off. Come a little while later, you accept a little more. Eventually, they've got the saddle on and the spurs in your back, and you're going to go where they want you to go, by George. You have no choice, and we're getting there because people have neglected studying. They've said, well, you know, John and Melody are saying a lot of things that I just don't know whether they're true or not. And chances are, for some of them, not for all of them, when the radio turns off today, they'll go on about their lives. And they'll say, well, that, you know, was, or that was a whacked program, or that was a good program, or, well, I don't know, that could be true. But they'll go on tomorrow and the next day. And they'll go on with their life. Like I said before, if you have knowledge and you know truth when you hear it, you've got a responsibility to do something with it. If you do nothing with it, you're guilty. And I don't want to be guilty. I want to do something to make a difference. I want to attack the attack. You know, in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul mentions some armor that we're told to put on if you're Christian. You know, you've got specific armor. All of that armor, except the helmet of salvation, which covers your whole head. That other armor only covers the front of your body. As long as you're facing the attack, you're safe. If you turn around, if you choose to stand still and let someone creep in unaware, like these people have done in our government, you're exposed. So you've got to be active. You've got to be in the battle. You've got to be fighting the fight. And I don't mean necessarily physically. If it comes to that, that too. But you've got to be involved in trying to do something to make a difference. And if we're in a spiritual battle, and I believe we are, go over to Iraq or Afghanistan and tell a soldier over there that's in a battle, hey, take your armor off. He's going to look at you and say, you're nuts. Can I borrow your helmet? No, get your own helmet. You know, can I have your gun? No, get your own gun, whether it's a sword or a gun. Put your armor on. I've got mine on, and I'm not taking it off. They sleep in it. They go to the bathroom in it. They eat in it. As long as they're in an area that's under siege, they have their battle on. If we're Christians, you know, if Paul said put it on 2,000 years ago, a lot of the Christians don't even know they're in the fight. They have no armor. They haven't put it on because they don't know the battle's on. And they're exposed.
One of the comments made by somebody observing what was going on with the demonstrations at the G20, which I'm sure a lot of people on even major media, watching major media, aren't even aware of a lot of the demonstrations going on and that sort, and we're saying, you know, these people went in to confront these men in full garbed suits, ready for battle, and yet they don't have even a gas mask. And their comment was if you at least had a gas mask, and they shot one of the canisters of chemicals at them, at least they can throw it back at them, because their one comment was they didn't have their gas masks on either.
Yeah.
So I mean they had their. They were full garbed in their protections, just like you were saying, with their SWAT suits on and that sort. But they didn't have a lot of them didn't have their gas mask on either. So it's, you know, how observant are we of what's going on, and how observant are we of the fact that we are in full battle right now? And the really sad part about it is they're fixing to inject us all with vaccines that 20 years ago when I heard they had, or I believe it's been 15, 20 years ago when they started talking about flu vaccines, didn't even make sense to me then, because flu was such a nebulous term. And now here we are getting these vaccinations for various flus that they've even patented the causative agent.
Well, listen, Melody, I'll leave you with this, and then I've really got to go. I'm running.
Okay, that's fine, and we got about an hour and a half in here, and I really appreciate you.
Okay, well, let me leave you with this. As far as the battle, Paul said we wrestle not against flesh and blood. We're in a spiritual battle, and if people can't see that, then I really feel for them. We are in a spiritual battle. If it was flesh and blood, we would know who our enemy was. So, I appreciate the opportunity. I really do. I hope
and
that.
And I appreciate the opportunity of you letting me do this interview with you.
Okay. I'll talk to you later on, then I've really got to go.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.